Interview with John Grenier, Grenier, former Republican state chairman and 1966 candidate for the United States Senate. Member of Republican State Executive Committee. July 17th, 1974, Birmingham, Alabama.
First, could you just give us a very summary, quick background of your own background in political involvement?
I became involved in the Young Republicans of Jefferson County, which is Birmingham, in the summer of 1960, and was elected president of the Young Republicans here in Birmingham. They only had 12 members, and all of them had already been president.
What's the reason?
And shortly after that, we got word from the Nixon campaign that he was coming to Birmingham for an appearance. And I think it was Red Blunt, who was the Nixon campaign manager for this and other states for the Citizens Movement. And a gentleman by the name of Caldwell Marks, I think, may have been the local chairman. And they asked the Young Republicans to be responsible for the Nixon visit. So we did that when he came to Birmingham in 1960, and that was my first involvement. Then in 1961, I became chairman of the statewide Young Republicans. And then in 1962, I became chairman of the Republican Executive Committee of Alabama after a contest with Claude Vorderman, who was then the state chairman, and Bill Longshore, who was inspired to. And then in 1963, I became the Southern Regional Director for the Goldwater President Committee. 1964, I became Executive Director of the Republican National Committee and was Special Assistant to Dean Birch. 1966, I ran unsuccessfully for the Senate against John Sparkman. 1968, I ran unsuccessfully for National Committeeman of the Republican Party against Jim Martin. And I'm still a member of the State Committee. That about winds it up.
How do you analyze the development of the Republican Party in Alabama during that period? Did it peak in 1966?
Yes, probably in the convention of 1966 was probably its peak strength. And at that same time, of course, the party made a disastrous error of running Martin against Wallace. But I would say it probably was at its peak strength in 1966, although in 1964, we elected five out of eight of Alabama's congressmen, five or six probate judges, and some 135 local Republicans in 1964. Two of those congressmen lost in 1966. Martin ran for governor, and Glenn Andrews was beaten by Bill Nichols. Three of them are still incumbent.
How about the number of probate judges? Local officials. That
I think I haven't kept current with that particularly. I think most of them have probably hung on. I'd say the majority of them. Perry Hooper down in Montgomery. Guy Hunt and Coleman. A couple of them have retired, one in DeKalb County and one in Blount County.
Why hasn't there been any significant growth in the 8 years since then? Well, really, it's 10 years, isn't it, since 64? 64 was the peak in terms of the election.
Yeah, I think there have been two main factors. One, been kind of an internecine war that went on continuously since 1966 between the members of the Birch Society and people that shared their views, and the Dixie crisis that we got in the party, who kind of naturally aligned with the Birch Society against the rest of us.
Recently in South Carolina that there's two kind of Republicans in South Carolina, conservative and ultra-conservative. Is that basically true in Alabama?
Oh, I think that's probably a little bit coming down a little bit hard. I depends on how, you know, that was races. The issue of race is in everything in Southern politics, I believe, at least in the Deep South states. If you get conservatism mixed up with that, you know, that creates a problem ideologically, I think, if you're trying to define people ideologically. But certainly, I think most of the Birch Society in Alabama and the people that align themselves with them, some of whom were fundamentalist, you know, religionists, and I don't know whether you'd call that conservative or not. I guess they certainly would be described by most people as being ultra-conservative. And I think when the party split here, the leader of the Dixiecrat element, which was Jim Martin, I guess, aligned himself with those people against people like myself, Dick Bennett, who were not segregationists. But we certainly were for Goldwater. We were certainly conservative by any definition in 1964's presidential election. But on the issue of race, we promoted the election of blacks to the state committee, to county committees, encouraged participation of blacks within the party generally. And that met with a great deal of opposition from the fundamentalists, Birch Society, Martins. So I don't, you find Republicans that have been aligned with our group in the past now, for example, that are very interested in Rockefeller in Alabama and in other places in the South. So,
but is the basis of that internecine struggle on the issue of race? Is that the principal issue that divides the two?
Well, I certainly think that race is one of the issues.
What would be some of the other issues that, that...
Well, I guess there is a strain of anti-intellectualism throughout Southern politics, from all the histories in Keys. But I think there certainly is an element of that. Yeah. At least that view is obviously favorable to our, to my position in the party. But it certainly is a view of anti-progressivism. At least that's the way I look at it and have viewed it.
But it also has
I've always thought, I think probably, well, I don't know whether there's always been a fundamentalist religionist attitude in the anti-intellectuals in the South. Certainly in the last decade you've seen some of this institutionalized in new churches here in Alabama, which have become very conservative within their own religions. You have offshoots of the Presbyterian Church that have become, some of the Presbyterians have become too liberal and they've broken off and formed new churches.
There were many of the Presbyterian congregations in Alabama involved in that schism, the recent one, that recent split off.
I'm not really knowledgeable about that. Jack Williamson, who has been active in Republican politics, has been the leader of that conservative element, I think, from Greenville, Alabama. He's a friend of Dick Bennett's. And on this score, he was kind of, has always been on our side of the fence, and yet apparently he's very conservative in that area. There is a new church formed here within the last decade called Briarwood Presbyterian Church, where a great deal of this fundamentalism rests. And you see a lot of political activity come out of that congregation. A lot of members of the Bird Society are members of that congregation. A lot of the members of the most conservative, ultra-conservative element of the Republican Party are members of that congregation. And I use that church only as an example, but you can see it in other towns and cities where you have a religious element in that group within the Republican Party. It is also includes the John Birch Society and also the segregationists.
Private school
and
movement tied in with that.
Became disenchanted with the Democratic Party.
The private school movement entwined.
The private school movement is certainly part of that.
Are there any other differences between the two groups in the party, ideological or based on issues?
Well, I'm trying to think of the domestic scene at first. I think our group probably is more flexible on things like fiscal affairs, unbalanced budgets over a number of years, a revamping of the welfare program, at least a willingness to look at something like the OEO. Whereas on the other hand, the other group would have outright opposition to those things. You have to balance the budget every year. OEO is foolishness and shouldn't be tried. Welfare should be abolished.
Is there a difference in the way the two groups sees Wallace?
I would think so. I think that the ultra-conservative group probably favors Wallace on the issues more closely than we would. On the other hand, I don't know whether they admire him as much as we do as a politician. It's a little bit of a dichotomy, I guess.
Do they favor him on the issues, or do they favor him on his rhetoric? Or is there a difference?
Well, certainly where he stood in the issues in the past. Now, what he's going to do now, I don't know where they'll stand with him.
How has this division affected the party in terms of candidates and organization?
Oh, it's just wiped it out.
Wiped it out?
Yeah.
I mean, all the energy is focused on the Center Nicene warfare?
Yeah, but I think the energy probably is out of that now.
It is?
Yeah, and I think we've managed to keep hold of the state committee by the hardest. And we've managed at least either to control some of the larger counties, or at least those that we don't control, they don't exist as viable units, which is, I guess, is a better alternative. But I don't know whether it is or not. I never have seen much purpose in creating a Republican Party that was institutionalization of the Dixiecrat movement. As far as I'm concerned, that's just haven't wasted a lot of time and effort.
You think that's behind you now?
Yes, I think that probably is behind us. I think we've come to the point where we haven't got much standing after the fight. But I don't think the Dixiecrats control the Republican Party of Alabama. And I don't think it's controlled by the Bird Society. But it's been a very difficult and long struggle to avoid that. And on the other hand, of course, you're always subject to possible exploitation by business interests and who seek to impose their views on the party generally. I think we've been successful in avoiding some of that. We haven't got much left after all that, but And I think if there's going to be a future in the Republican bar in Alabama now, it's going to be a question of reviving support generally on issues that are of broad appeal to the people generally in Alabama.
Do you see that revival coming?
Well, I think it depends upon an opportunity, an electoral opportunity. I don't know when that will occur.
You mean for statewide office?
For statewide office or in a presidential situation. I think the 1976 presidential elections could be very important in the revival of the Republican Party, not only here, but elsewhere. Because it might... it seems to me, result for the first time in a real coalition among Southern leadership with leadership throughout the rest of the country. I don't think we've really seen that within the Republican Party yet. I mean, we had the fight in 1964, which accomplished the redistribution of power within the Republican Party in accordance with where the votes had started to come from. It seemed to us there was an imbalance in 1964 in the leadership of the Republican Party, whereas most of it rested in the East and to some extent in the Midwest, whereas the Republican Party for years had been losing strength in the East and to some extent in the Midwest and gaining strength in the South and the West. And yet that new strength wasn't represented to any extent in the leadership councils of the Republican Party. And to correct that imbalance was a first step, I think, to, if you wanted the South and the West fully supporting the Republican Party as a national party. That was a very difficult imbalance to correct, but I think we corrected it in 1964, as traumatic as it was. But, again, in 1968, I guess the delegates from the West and the conservative delegates from the Midwest and the South had to establish that that balance had been corrected. And I guess they did pretty clearly, although I don't think the question was ever in doubt that Nixon was going to be nominated. From 1964 on, basically. And when he was nominated, I think that made it clear to everybody within the party that the South and West was going to play a role. That's just the beginning of it. To make it effective, there has to be, it seems to me, a liaison and a communication established among the leaders nationally on some ground on which they can agree throughout the country on issues. For the South to be able to do that in large measure, it could not go to those councils being controlled by the Birth Society. It couldn't go to those councils as a segregationist party. And it couldn't go to those councils with an attitude of anti-progressivism. Those elements really have to come out of the Republican Party in the South to establish any ground for communication in the national Republican Party.
Do you see that happening?
Well, I have not been as close to the situation in other southern states in the last 5 years as I had previously been. So I really don't know what the situation is in Mississippi. I don't know what the situation is in Louisiana, South Carolina. I do know what the situation is in Alabama, and I think probably, I have hope at least, that the majority of the Alabama delegation, and I know the leadership of the party at this time, is in a position to have that kind of a dialogue that would be productive. I don't have any doubt that Tennessee, Virginia, Arkansas, Florida, Texas, and Georgia would be in that position. I don't think there's much chance that the parties in those last states I mentioned, Texas and Florida and so forth, which had large Republican elements before 1964, I don't think that they'd be marred with the issues that would prevent a cohesive national Republican Party. But I think up until the time we could get rid of those elements and those issues within the Republican Party, number one, it made it profitable for people like Hugh Scott, Scranton, and to some extent, although I always thought he did it a little reluctantly, Rockefeller, was to exploit that southern element of the party on those issues for their own benefit. Once those issues are removed, and that opportunity for exploitation will no longer be possible. And as a result of that not being available, there won't be the opportunity for that kind of friction among elements of the party. So I would say that the party in the South, as a part of the National Party, has made progress. It's been a very difficult struggle within the party itself, and great opportunities have been missed as a result of it. And some very unfortunate things have been done, throwing away congressmen after gubernatorial seats that couldn't be won. Well, even in 1964, the failure of the party throughout the South to simply choose candidates and put them on the ballot in all these congressional races. I don't know how many tens of congressional seats that cost, even perhaps a couple of Senate seats. But so great opportunities have been missed, which I guess is just means that it's going to take a longer time to mature the party in the South.
Some of the Republicans we've talked with suggest that the party is sort of treading water until Wallace leaves the scene. You know, since George and Martin's defeat in 66, since Red Blunt's defeat in 72, they feel that because Wallace dominates the state, it's really not too important or practical to field statewide candidates. That until he gets off, we just sort of tread water and pass the time.
Well, Blunt and Martin have always had kind of a Wallace fixation. I think if they've had a problem, and I'm not suggesting that they have, that's been one of them. Governor Wallace the Republican Party came to prominence in Alabama at the same time George Wallace did. In 1962, basically. And George Wallace was no deterrent to that growth in Alabama. Nor do I think it was ever necessary that he be a deterrent. I think once, of course, you decide to butt heads with him, it just didn't make a lot of sense. And George Wallace very much represents the people of this state in majority fashion. But if you don't butt heads with him directly, then I don't think it's ever very likely that he's going to do anything concrete to impede the growth of the Republican Party. I don't think that Governor Wallace ever has seen the Republican Party of Alabama as a direct threat to him.
Is that just a rationalization then?
What?
To not really do anything because Wallace dominates the
scene. Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably irrelevant, basically. Wallace dominates the scene.
Someone told us that you encouraged Martin to make the race for governor, at least that you were perceived as having encouraged him to make that race in 66.
That's absolutely not so.
What was your position at that time?
Well, of course, I guess everybody's trying to pin the tail on that donkey, I'm sure. But basically, I was running for governor in 1965. I started running for governor in the summer of 1965. Called the entire state committee, asked them what their thoughts were. Then I met with the congressman in Washington in the fall of 1965. And I had several meetings with Martin to make, because I recognized him as the leader of the party as far as the candidate was concerned. He could do anything he wanted to do as far as I was concerned. Run for Congress, run for governor, run for the Senate. And the party would nominate him and should nominate him. So my understanding of the situation was, is that he was not interested in running for governor. So we had a meeting in Birmingham, which Red Blunt attended, and Hall Thompson attended, and Jim Martin attended. And there were several other people. Dick Bennett was there. And my closest political associate at the time, his name is Tom Brigham. And we made our recommendations. That was in December of 1965. We made our recommendations to Jim that he either run for Congress. What we really thought, our first recommendation was that he run for Congress and keep his seat in Congress, and then run for Hill's Senate seat in 1968, which would be a presidential year. And we had understood that Hill might be retiring, and that would be an open seat. It seemed to us to be a very good opportunity, particularly if the presidential thing was going to look good. The second alternative was for him to run against Sparkman. And under no circumstances did we think he ought to run for governor. At that time, there were two main candidates on the Democratic side. One was John Patterson, and the second one was Ryan DeGraffenreid, who was very popular at the time. And there was some talk of Mrs. Wallace, but at that time it was not at the point of being very serious. At least nobody thought it was. Well, I won't say it wasn't serious. It certainly hadn't been decided at that time that Mrs. Wallace would run in December of 65. Our thought on the gubernatorial campaign was that, although in 1962 we were able to persuade the convention not to nominate a candidate for governor against Wallace, and that was over a stiff battle on the floor, they agreed not to nominate a candidate against Wallace. And we ran Jim Martin for the Senate by himself with three other congressmen on the ticket. And he did very well. We didn't think we could get through the 1966 convention without nominating a candidate for governor. Thought we had to have something. So we knew we had to have somebody run for governor. And we concluded pretty well that they couldn't win. There was just no chance. And we had a poll done by opinion research out of Princeton, New Jersey. And the poll indicated that there was very little, if any, chance that either Martin or myself or Blunt or anybody, even though Blunt wasn't active in the Republican Party at the time, we still had his name in the poll, I believe. So, but nevertheless, we thought somebody ought to run. And that confronted us with the problem that the main objective of 1966 was to elect members to the legislature and the state senate and to retain our congressional seats. And that was our game plan for 1966, was retain the five congressional seats, nail them down, and get maybe a third of the state legislature and a third of the state senate. That's what we wanted. So, in order to give some cohesiveness to the legislative candidates, we wanted a good candidate for governor who understood he was going to lose. And that was me, is what we decided, because I had some ambitions of running for office in the future. If we ran a decent race against whoever it might be, that wouldn't hurt anything. And it would give us some control in the field, and and some cohesiveness over the legislative candidates, who were going to have a difficult time getting across to people what they stood for, because none of them had run basically before, none of them were well known, and we were limited as to the funds. So what we recommended was that I run for governor, and that Jim Martin either run for Congress or against Sparkman. Jim said he didn't want to run against Sparkman, just didn't think he could beat him. And said at the conclusion of that meeting that he would run for governor on the advice of Blunt and Hall Thompson, who was his chief financial advisor. And Hall and Blunt were going to put up the money, which I think was the key element in persuading Martin to go forward with the money. At least I've always thought that, but I don't know that. So I told Jim that if he were going to do that, then I'd oppose him in the convention, because we thought this was insanity. So after that meeting, I went back with Tom Brigham and Herbert Stockham, as I recall, and I told him I wasn't thinking about staying in any governor's race. And if Jim Martin wanted to run for governor, you know, that was fine. That's what he wanted to do. But I was getting out. I mean, I had other things to do. I was practicing law, and the last thing I needed was a convention fight against Jim Martin for a race I didn't want to be in anyway. So we agreed, nevertheless, to stay in the race for a month to see whether Martin would drop out. I'm sure that Martin and Blunt and Thompson were plotting on the other side about how to get me out. Unbeknownst to them, that was no problem at all. So in a month, when Martin didn't drop out, I just called Hall Thompson and told him I was getting out and wished him good luck and so forth. And so I dropped out of the governor's race, and we called a meeting of all the leaders of the Republican Party, regional directors, vice chairman, and so forth. And I announced I was withdrawing as a candidate for governor. Martin announced that he was going to be a candidate for governor. And the question was asked at that meeting, would he be a candidate if Lurline Wallace was the Democratic candidate? He said he certainly would be. And at that meeting, Tom Brigham, who was the state chairman, again reiterated his recommendations to the leadership of the party as to what ought to be done, which is that I should run for governor, Martin should run for Congress, and something be done about the Senate seat, or nothing be done about it. So Martin determined to run for governor, and I more or less withdrew from any activity. I wasn't state chairman or anything else, and left my law practice and went into the investment business. And for all intents and purposes, I was finished with politics for that, you know, for the short run. So the governor, Van de Graffenried, got killed. And then Mrs. Wallace announced. And by June, here we'd spent 2 years recruiting some 150 candidates for the legislature and the state senate and raising the money to fund those races. And by June, because of Martin's opposition, he had announced for governor against Lurline Wallace. The thing was just absolutely in a ditch and going down quickly, in our view. So the Democratic primary was held. Mrs. Wallace beat everybody in sight, and Martin was still making noises about running against him. We got the results in on the Sparkman race, and it was clear that there was an element of vulnerability in Sparkman. So I called Martin in Washington and asked him whether or not he wanted to run for the Senate. He said no, that he had talked to Earl McGowan in Greenville about running for the Senate. So we concluded that I would run for the Senate, mainly to get some position on the ballot, you know, could get this thing together and provide some leadership to all the candidates running. So when Martin said he wouldn't run, and I called him back again, I decided to run for the Senate, and that was a very bad mistake, because the situation at that point just could not be salvaged. And in any event, it couldn't be salvaged by me running for the Senate. And that was just a personal mistake, Judge. I thought I could exercise some leadership from that Senate position. And as it turned out, that was impossible. And people looked on me as a candidate for the Senate, and that was that. As far as giving the party any direction, it simply was not a possible, wasn't possible. So Martin continued in his efforts to run for governor, and I continued in my efforts to run for the Senate. Before the convention, there was some suggestion that I withdraw from the Senate race and let Martin run for the Senate, and I was far too committed to do that. So I was nominated for the Senate, and Martin went through with the gubernatorial campaign. And as far as being elected to the Senate itself, from a personal standpoint, Brigham and I had concluded that we would probably run about 10 points ahead of the ticket against Martin. And the bet we made, which was also a mistake from my personal standpoint, and as far as just being elected to the Senate was concerned, as apart from the leadership of the party, we concluded that Martin would get 40% of the vote, or at least there was a 50-50 chance that he would get about 40%, at least 40% of the vote against Mrs. Wallace. And if he did that, then we'd be at 50. As it turned out, I think he got 29. We got 40. So that bet didn't pan out either. So we still think that Martin should have run for Congress. And I think had he run for Congress, Governor Wallace would not have intervened. Even running for the Senate, I think we probably could have beaten Spartan, although that would have been very difficult.
Well, why did Martin do it?
I don't know why he did it.
One version we heard of that, was that the meeting at the airport? The meeting you're talking about in December of 65?
No, that was in the state committee headquarters.
Well, one of the meetings we heard about was that Martin just announced it unilaterally that he was going to do this, and that everybody was surprised that he was going to run for governor.
There wasn't.
Everybody we talked to said they advised against it, and they were really surprised when he did it.
We had a meeting at the airport, but it was after the Democratic primary, and it was a round table meeting, and that's when I announced that I was going to run for the Senate. Mm-hmm. But at that meeting, I asked Martin what he was going to do, and at that meeting, he could have changed his mind, and if he had, I'd have walked right out of the meeting and back into the investment business. But he said that he was going to run for governor. Blunt was at that meeting. This was really the first time I ever recall Blunt participating in any Republican Party politics. Was that meeting in the state committee in December 65, and then in the meeting at the airport. He'd made a cash contribution to Goldwater in 64. And of course he'd been in these citizens' movements, the next, so, but he'd never taken an active role in the Republican Party.
But that series of decisions, or that decision, was really critical of the Republican Party in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, that, you
made
know,
every,
that's,
all
why we, so that's why I'm trying to understand a little bit better, because that really was a critical decision.
It was the critical decision in the growth of the Republican Party of Alabama.
Is it your interpretation that his entry in the governor's race was resulted in the virtual decimation of the legislative candidates?
No question about it.
Because it really wiped
out.
Well,
I'd say no question about it. I don't know how the legislative candidates would have done. But with Martin running against Wallace, it was impossible. And particularly, he
was Wallace not campaigning for the whole ticket, for the Democratic
no,
ticket?
No, but it was a straight ticket pull in South Alabama. I think John Spartman carried Dothan in Houston County, Alabama for the first time in his political career. Whereas I was doing all right up in places in the Tennessee Valley, in Lauderdale County, and so forth. But in South Alabama, it was a straight ticket pull. Martin made a couple of remarks about Mrs. Wallace, one of which is, we don't want no skirt for no governor. I recall one of the remarks. And I think some of the remarks he made about Mrs. Wallace during that campaign tended to inflame the situation a bit. And by October, I mean, the deal was down the chute. It was irretrievable. But as far as the decision was concerned, as far as I know, that was James D. Martin's sole decision out of his own ambition.
5 or 6 months in which that decision could have been reshaped, it could have been changed all the way from December through the primaries.
It still could have been changed
based on the polls, based on DeGraffen Reed's death and so on, or Lorleen's announcement and so on.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been changed.
Any time up to the time he was nominated.
That's right.
I started talking to him about it in either July or August of 1965.
So then you had almost a year's time.
A year. I knew the decision was going to be critical. I wanted the entire party to be looking at this thing for a full year. And we talked about it, and the congressman talked about it, and Martin talked about it. And when he decided to run for governor, I got out.
When was it that he wanted, at the end there, for you to get out of the Senate race and him to run?
He never really directly asked me to get out of the Senate race.
But he did.
I don't ever recall anybody directly coming to me and saying, John, how about withdrawing from the Senate race and letting Martin run? But there were newspaper stories, and there were indirect suggestions that I do that. I was not willing to do that.
Was this before the nomination?
Yeah. Now, I was willing to be defeated for the nomination. If somebody wanted to come at me, that was fine. But I was not going to, after having announced for the Senate, having started a campaign, having given them all, given Martin a year's time to make this decision, and having put it out there for over a year for everybody to comment on it, and then having announced for the Senate, I was not going to withdraw. Now, if somebody wanted to come at me on the convention floor and take the nomination, as far as I was concerned, that was fine. That's fair and square and the way it ought to be. And if he won the nomination, that would have been fine. But as far as withdrawing, I was not willing to do that.
When was that convention?
I think it was in July of 1967.
Did you have any polls which showed you that by having somebody like Martin opposing Wallace, Lorleen Wallace, that it would hurt the candidate on that, opposing Sparkman?
I'm not sure that you can get a poll like that. Sure it's possible to construct a poll like that. The only real poll we had, there was a lot of talk at the time that Martin was a better candidate than I was, and certainly that's so. He was more popular, he was better known, had run before, and was an incumbent congressman. There wasn't any question in my mind about that, either then or now. But the one poll we did have showed Sparkman beating Martin for the Senate, something like 63-19 to 23, and beating me for the Senate about 65-19, which indicated to us that all when we were looking at the governor's thing, that it didn't make much difference whether Martin or I ran for governor, because we both get beaten pretty badly, and if you get beat, what difference does it make who gets beat the least? Now, as to running for the Senate, we never really compared that. And we didn't have a poll, except that poll that showed Sparkman ahead of us both by wide margin.
Yeah, but there must have been some way to measure the feeling about Lorleen Wallace.
Oh, there wasn't any question in anybody's mind that if we ran against Lorleen Wallace, that was going to be very bad.
But made Jim the decision Martin, to go ahead anyway.
Jim Martin was a congressman. He was 45 years old, a successful businessman, and to suggest that, as it has been suggested from various sources, that somebody coerced him into running for governor, I just don't know how you make a man put his name on a ballot if he doesn't want to run. There isn't any way to do that I know about.
Is the general interpretation, though, that Martin's being on the ballot against Lurleen killed off the legislative candidates?
That's my conclusion.
Well, if he had not run for governor, if nobody had run for governor, the Republicans hadn't put up a candidate for governor, would it have made any difference?
Oh, my heavens, yes. The best situation was not to run anybody for governor. And the only reason the question ever came up was because we didn't think we could get through that convention without a candidate for governor. Now, when you get into a convention, if you don't have a candidate that you know you can go with, anything can happen. And what we didn't want to end up with was an unstable candidate who was going to cause these legislative candidates problems. We didn't want some wild racist, a wild radical, or just generally unstable, unthoughtful person running for governor. Because what we wanted to do was get these legislative candidates in office, because we felt like that would sink the taproot of the Republican Party in state politics like nothing else could. And it was of absolute critical importance to the growth of the party in this state and elsewhere that that be done. And everything else could have stayed pat for 1966. We wouldn't have lost anything if we'd kept all five congressmen. And it was insane to run against Wallace. Just there was no way to beat George Wallace, old Early. That was just pure insanity. And we knew we were going to have the trouble with the Republican Party, because those delegates had a full head of steam after the Goldwater election, and they thought they could beat anybody. And we knew we were going to have some difficulties, because they figured what they ought to do is take on Wallace, beat him.
They figured they were the majority party after 64?
Oh, they just thought they could take on anybody. And they'd been, stepped on, shown it into the back room for low these many years. And they wanted a piece of these Democrats. And when Martin said he wanted to run for governor, boy, that's just all they needed. They just knew they were going to win that. And there wasn't any way to stop it. All the way to stop it was for Martin to get out. And I'm sure that some people say, if you'd have gotten out of the Senate race, then he'd have gotten out of the governor's race. I never saw the two as being necessarily tied together.
Since that time, has it been difficult to recruit candidates and money and build the organization?
Well, of course, the party was decimated after the election of 66. Then the pin in the donkey tail started. And I think during the end of the campaign, I ran some ads which appealed to the Wallace vote. And the ads were that George Wallace was not endorsing Spartan.